All right, everybody, welcome to the 7th episode of the podcast. Let's just jump right into it. So, the teenage years. If there's ever been a time period where your parents question why they had children, this is the time period where that usually happens, because for some reason, the teenage years are the years that you just really get under your parents' skin. You troll them so much and you don't even realize it because the chemicals in your brain are telling you one thing and you're doing another, and you don't even have it together upstairs, so you can't even see the wrong in what you're doing. You just know that your parents are lunatics and they're crazy and they don't understand you, and the whole world doesn't understand you because you're perfect and everybody else is stupid. Literally, that's how teenagers think. And I say that because after working in youth development and working with teenagers for so many years, every time that they do something that's just so out of pocket and I'm like, what the hell? I can't even get overly mad or irate with them because in reality, I see myself in them. I literally see how I used to be this time 15 years ago. So while we're on the eventful teenage years, let's flash back to some of mine. So at this point in time, it is my junior year of high school, and there's two different worlds going on in my house. At this point, my father's job has him in Alaska, and so right now, again, it's me, my mother, and my brother living in house. Now, me, I think that I am just the perfect child. You know, I got really, really good grades. My GPA was so on point during my junior year of high school. Like, I had it together. You know, I was doing all the extracurricular activities at school. Life was cool. My mother, on the other hand, swore that I was like this problem child from the Maury show. You remember on Maury where they used to have the out-of-control teenagers going there? And, you know, they'd be like, yeah, what, Maury? I sell drugs. I have sex. And what? What you gonna do about it? Look at this body, Maury. And then they talk all that trash. And then as soon as the boot camp guy comes on, they're already crying and they haven't even made it backstage yet. Yeah, so my mom thought I was literally one of those kids. She just swore up and down I was the worst thing walking. And what used to get me was, low-key, I wasn't really doing a whole lot. You know, my friends at this point were, like, having sex and smoking and drinking and stuff, and I wasn't doing all of that stuff. I might have been doing some of it, but not all of it. But anyway, at this time period, I was starting to recognize that there were things I wanted to do in life. And I knew I wanted to work in entertainment. Like, literally, that was my dream at the time. I wanted to be an actor. I used to always tell everybody I was going to be in Rush Hour 3. But then it came out before I went to college, so that was canceled. So maybe Rush Hour 4 if they ever make one. But anyway, I really thought I was going to be an actor at the time, or a movie director. Those are the two main things I wanted to be. And Brett Ratner was my favorite person in the world. He was the movie director that did Money Talks and Rush Hour. Like, Chris Tucker was my favorite person to want to be like at the time. So, you know, I was really like, I just got to get out of this little town that I live in, and I got to get to Hollywood, and I got to get to New York, and I'm, you know, I got to be around some real people. And so that meant that I had to get out of my wonderful little wholesome town of Spanaway, Washington. And for me, it seemed like the only way to really get out was get into a really good college that's in one of these big metropolitan cities and take it from there. And so the issues that we started running into were that my parents had other plans. They really wanted me to stay local. They wanted me to stay in Washington State and, you know, go to Central Washington University or go to Eastern Washington University, you know, maybe University of Washington. They thought that school was a little too big and a little too expensive, but, you know, they needed me to stay local. And me, I'm like, no. I am a gift to the world, and the world is just waiting for me to be discovered, and that can't happen if I go to some hicktown school in the desert, so that's not gonna happen. And so I was really getting on their nerves during this time period. It wasn't just the college arguments, but it was just a bunch of different things. And pretty much, once you've had a taste of bits and pieces of the world, it's hard to still have the same mindset once you've been exposed to stuff. And as you know, because my parents were military, you know, I had lived around the world and I'd been to all these different places and I was just discovering stuff. And so at the time, I just felt that my parents lived in such a small world and that my world was bigger. And so that caused a lot of problems because there were too many big heads in the house, but there were only two heads in the household that were paying the bills, and I was not one of them. So, you know, that led into a bunch of different arguments. Things had gotten so bad that one time I emailed my aunt. Now, if you remember or if you've been following this podcast, this is the same aunt I talked about in the very first episode of this podcast. This is the aunt that ended up being this big time lawyer who was just extremely successful. Like, she was the lawyer for Ross Perot when he ran for president. Now, I don't know why she tells anybody that. I'd probably keep that a secret. But, you know, she was his attorney. And, you know, when George Sotomayor was, you know, appointed to the Supreme Court, she was on one of the councils that approved that before the president could lock some other things in. You know, she's big time. And so she would always get in my ear about, you know, you just have to soar and you have to fly and you can move to Nova Scotia and study whales if you want to. You just gotta do it. You are your only limitation. So she was a great motivational speaker, make you feel good about everything. And so I sent her this email and I'm like, you know, Auntie, my family's just crazy. No one understands me. I don't want to live here anymore. They're stopping me from being famous. They're just stopping me from doing all the things that I want to do. And they don't come to any of my performances. And they don't do this. And they don't do that. And this long email, I just let my parents have it in this email. So, you know, time passes by. And, you know, one day I come home from school. And it's been a good day. You know, everything is smooth. Everybody's in a good mood. And of course, like I said, it's me, my mother, my brother in the house. So my mom is talking about something and, you know, we're all laughing. And ha ha ha. So my mother has the mail. She's looking through it and she's like, oh, look, your aunt wrote you a letter. All right, let's go ahead and read it. And here was the thing. A lot of times because my aunt had such a unique handwriting. Like, she has a handwriting you can't read. It's like this really, really intense cursive. There's doctor's handwriting and there's lawyer's handwriting, but whatever she writes it, it's like this special, special handwriting that is only for the upper echelons of society. Like, that's how she writes. You can't read what the hell it says. And so my mother would have to read it to try to make sense of it. And so my heart starts pounding because I'm like, I hope this is not her responding to my email. And it was. I was like, oh, shoot. So my mother starts reading the letter. And it was so funny because literally you can see her tone change as she reads the letter. I don't have the letter with me. It's actually, I still have it. It's in like my mother's house in like this bin that I have in my room back at home. So I wish I could read it to you because it was so triggering for her. But my mother's reading it and she's like, you know, dear Michael, don't ever let anyone stop you from your dream. Something, something, something. You just need to understand that your mother never went to college and what? And she doesn't. And out of nowhere to move. Boy, what did you tell your aunt? Why are you telling her? What? Like, my mother flips out because my aunt low-key went in on my mom in this letter. Like, you know, your mom doesn't understand certain things because she went to the military. And so they have a different way of doing things and da-da-da-da-da. And you have to just be you and do you. And so my mom is like, what did you tell your aunt? And I'm like, I just told her, like, listen, I'm a little stressed out and I just need to vent to somebody. And I was annoyed because I'm like, auntie, damn, man, I sent you an email. How you gonna respond with a letter? You know it's gonna come to the house. And you know my mother reads everybody's mail. She don't care if her name is on it or not. It's at her house, so she gonna read it. My mother is hot, like livid, like she's going off. How dare you sit there and you just randomly write crazy things? What did you say? Because there's no reason. And really what it was is she was really pissed at what my aunt had said. Because to her it felt like, okay, so these are the kind of conversations you and your aunt are having about me. Oh, okay. All right. And for her, she's kind of like, you know, I'm buying you all these nice clothes and everything like that. And you got a roof over your head and I'm doing the best I can. And you want to be ungrateful and start snitching to your aunt or whatever, who doesn't have children, who doesn't live in the real world. So she can tell you all this nonsense and you'll eat it all up. That's what you're doing, huh? Okay. And so I'm like, it's not even that big of a deal. I'll even show you what I wrote. So like an idiot, I go and I dig up the email that I sent her. So she starts reading it, and I'm over here thinking like, okay, this should put me in the clear because I didn't say too much. She reads that thing, and it's like the whole world just stops. And she's like, you were better off not even showing me this because now I'm really pissed off. You have just, boy, you know what? You know, everything canceled. Canceled. And so what she meant by canceled meant, like, this is how much of a dork I used to be. I didn't spend a whole lot of time partying too often because I was so involved with the school stuff. And so canceled meant that, okay, all of the dance stuff is on pause. Track is on pause. The theater production that you're in that you just fought and clawed to get like the lead role in, that's canceled. Don't ask about nothing else. You ain't going nowhere. You're in the house all day. As a matter of fact, you can go ahead and unplug that stereo. You can unplug that keyboard making all that dang noise. All of that is canceled. You are done. And for me, that just set me off. And because that just translated to everything you've ever wanted to do in life is done. You're finished. So just go ahead and jump off the cliff. That's how I interpreted it. So I'm hot. I'm about to call her every name in the book. And I'm like, you know what? Let me just walk downstairs. So I start going downstairs, trying to tune her out, going to unplug everything that she said unplug. and that includes the TV as well. And I'm livid. But guess who decides they wanted to troll? The younger brother, Marcus. Of course, this is Christmas for him. So he starts following me. Up, I see you messed up today. And I'm like, Marcus, get away from me. Marcus, fuck away from me. Like, so then he's like, ooh, I'm telling you cussed. And now remember, I used to always be like, go ahead and tell her. But I remember what happened that time I called her the little bald-headed whole thing. And like, I talked about that in another podcast before. And so I'm like, you know what? I'm not doing this with you, Marcus. Get away from me. Just get out of my room. Get out. And he's, no, Mom told me to make sure that you unplug everything. I'm like, I don't have, all of y'all can kick rocks. I'm ready to fight everybody. And so I'm like, Marcus, get out of my room. And so he's like, I'm going to tell Mom you're not listening. So he starts walking back up the stairs. And so I push him. What does he decide to do? He decides to throw himself up the stairs. And like, my parents have a split level house. So like, when you walk in, it's, you either go up or down. If you go up, that's where the kitchen and the living room and all of their rooms are. If you go down, that's where my room and the garage and like the other living room is. And so he throws himself up the stairs and lands on that middle part where the front door is. And he rolls on the floor and just, mind you, he's acting. He's not crying at all. But he knew that if he could put on a show, I'd get in even more trouble. So he forced that one tear to come out. And I don't know where it came from, but somehow he had a tear. And so my mom, I just hear some stuff. Like stumping back towards the other side of the house, and boom, boom, what is going on here? And then Mark is, oh, he attacked me, he threw me, I'm down the stairs. And I'm like, I didn't throw him down the stairs. How did I throw him down the stairs if I'm down here and he's up there? What sense does that make? And my mom is like, who are you yelling at? And I'm like, you know what, Mom, I'm tired of this. Everybody in this house is crazy. Like, you never supported me. And so out of nowhere, I decided to bring up everything that I've ever been mad about. I'm like, you are just crazy. I do everything right. I clean the house. I have straight A's. I don't get in trouble. I've never been suspended. I da-da-da-da-da. And then I start bringing up everything. I'm like, and you made us get rid of the dog because he barked too much and you didn't even tell us. We just came home from church and the Humane Society was here to pick him up. And you never let me go to the TLC concert because you said the rapture was coming and I was going to go to hell if I was there. And now one of them's dead and I'll never get to see them again. And then your way of apologizing was, you bought me the Destiny's Child Survivor Tour DVD, and I don't even like them. And you guys still won't let me drive my car. I have to walk past it every day to go to school. You know how I'm And I'm just talking all this shit. And anyway, as I'm over here doing this rant, my mother has turned into G.I. Jane. I swear, like, her head just spin around, like, one whole time. Like the Exorcist is, And so she morphs into, like, some Megatron fighter warrior, and she just starts charging towards me, and she just slapping and quack, quack, quack. And so here's the thing, in every Afro-Latino, West Indian, African, and Black household, if your parents have ever struck you or they're trying to hit you or anything, and you put that hand up to protect your face or any part of your body, and you are over the age of 11, that means that you're fighting back. And so by, so she was doing all that swinging. I just remember I put my hand up to just protect my face. And to her, that equaled that I had pulled out an entire chair and bashed her over the head with it. And then I got a baseball bat and I tried to swing at her. And then I punched her in the throat. And then on top of that, I burned the house down. That's what that, putting that one little hand to protect my face translated into. So she was, oh, you wanna fight? You wanna fight? And I'm like, what are you talking about? I don't want to fight. And so now she's like, get out of my sight before, go right now. Because she was literally, like, I think if she ever was going to kill me, it would have been that day. And so she saved my life by letting me go back downstairs. And so I stormed downstairs. I remember I'm mad. I got tears flowing because I wanted to lay into her. But I knew it was my mother. I'm never going to hit that woman. I love her to death. I was just so mad because it was like everything that I had felt at the time was had built up. And so my mom is living. Marcus is still pretending to cry. My mom, Marcus ain't in the room. You go to your room. Go to your room. And so everybody, Marcus is crying. She's dialing my dad's number in the last, calling him right now because she's about to tell him how much of a terrible son I am. And I'm downstairs. I'm pacing around him. And I wanted to punch the wall so bad, but I knew if I punched the wall, it'd be a hole in it. And then there'd be a hole in my head. So I just had to sit there and I had to punch the pillows on my bed. Like, I was going through it. And so things calmed down a little bit, but then my mom finally gets a hold of my dad. Oh God, my dad's on the phone. My mom's like, Michael, get up here right now, your dad's on the phone. And so I'm getting up there, and now she's telling my dad all the stuff that I did, and he swung at me, and he da da da, and I know he was cussing, and da da da, and he did this and he did that. And I mind you, both of us had over-exaggerated everything that happened. In my head, my mother told me that my whole future was canceled and that, you know, I would just be a slave in the house and all I would do for the rest of my life was clean, vacuum, and dust. Like, that's what I thought happened. And to her, I had turned into, you know, the WWE SmackDown champion of the world, and I was disrespectful and I was smoking, doing drugs, and shooting up heroin. Like, that's literally the two worlds that we were in. And so my dad gets on the phone. He's, what is wrong with you? Don't you know I will fly down there? I will kick you. Like, just, I'm like, you know what? And so I done got cussed out. Things calmed down. And then my mom comes to talk to me and she's like, you know, do you want to go to a home? I'm like, for what? Because at this point, I'm good now. It is what it is. I'm just doing my little homework, looking out the window, just plotting my whole life after high school. Like, okay, that's cool. Because as soon as I get out of high school, I'm out this motherfucker. Like, I'm out this. And so, you know, she's like, do you want to go to a home? I'm like, God, mom, you are so dramatic. Like, first of all, that was like the one blow up I have ever had. Now, you know, these other teenagers and stuff, they done got in trouble for drugs and fighting and this, that, and the third, and wrecking their parents' car and doing all kind of stuff. All I did was have a meltdown, and now all of a sudden I gotta go to a home. Because she was like, maybe you just need to spend some time in like a boy's home for a few months just so you can get yourself together. I'm like, no, I'm fine, mama. I'm really good. Like, low key, I'm actually fine. And so time passes. We fast forward a few months. And so my parents have decided that, you know what, you need to go away for a while. You know, you're just, you know, I think you need to spend some time in Savannah, Georgia, with your grandmother. And for me, that was the best thing I had ever heard, because I think they thought that that was going to be a punishment, because, you know, my grandmother's house is very throwback. Like, there was no internet there. You know, she had cable, but, you know, there wasn't going to be any video games. There wasn't going to be anything like that. It was just going to be, you know, in Savannah, Georgia, in East Savannah, and that was it. And so they forgot that my grandmother's house was like freaking Disney World. I was hyped. So my mom was like, yeah, that's where you're going this summer, because she remembered how much of a fit I threw when I had to stay at that mushroom farm for spring break. And so she knew that I really enjoyed being around my friends when we didn't have school. So she was like, her way of punishing me. And my father agreed, was like, okay, you know, send him to Georgia to spend some time with his grandma in Savannah. And that's perfect, because, you know, maybe y'all have been around each other too long, and it's too many heads in the household. And so he can go get to his senses, because his grandmother's going to keep him in line. And then you can do what you need to do to get your peace of mind. And as a matter of fact, we'll send Marcus with him too. So you just have the house to yourself. Really what it was, my mom and dad just wanted the honeymoon for that summer, because I think my dad's contract with Alaska was ending and he was going to be back in Washington State for the summer. So they just wanted the house to themselves. That's what that was really about. So the school year ends, and at this point my dad is back in Washington State. It's been probably 4 months since the big blowout had happened. And you know, I'm getting on the plane and we fly to Savannah, Georgia, me and my brother. And when I tell you that I ended up having the best summer ever, like, literally, I think of that summer of 05 as just the greatest time period in life. Like, such a good time. Here's the thing about Savannah, Georgia. For me, Savannah, Georgia feels like my actual home. I've always kind of felt homeless because we moved so much. Like, literally, if I think back, we've lived in so many houses growing up because of just my parents' careers and us moving, that I never felt centered. Like, when I think back, I switched elementary schools like 3 or 4 times. Like, I remember I used to go to school in Fort Lewis, and I went to Beechwood Elementary. And then I ended up going to Camas Prairie Elementary in Spanaway, Washington. And then we moved to Italy, and I went to Vicenza Elementary School. Then when we came back from Italy, I was back at Camas Prairie, but it was totally different because at this point I was in 6th grade, and I hadn't been there since 2nd or 3rd, and so it was a totally different experience, and it was a lot going on. Even today, I still kind of feel that homeless vibe. Like, I've been in D.C. for about 12 years, but D.C. still doesn't even feel like home. D.C. just kind of feels like a pit stop, and eventually I'm going somewhere else. But now, even the last house that we lived in before I graduated from high school, my mother's actually getting ready to sell that and relocate to Atlanta. So I'm like, dang, I just have no roots anywhere. So that's why I think I just always have had a connection with Savannah. And my grandmother's house is still there. Their family owns it. Nobody lives in it at the moment. My grandmother died in 2010. And so the house has kind of just been sitting there low-key falling apart, but I don't care. It's still a constant, so I need them to get that house together, because y'all erasing what's left of my childhood. Now to introduce you to the family so things make sense for the rest of this podcast. So in Savannah, you have my Aunt Gloria. My Aunt Gloria is pretty much, I'd like to say, she's the level-headed aunt in the family. She's the level-headed one. My mother has 3 other sisters. So it's my mother, it's the rich lawyer aunt, it's Gloria, and then it's the youngest sister, Sylvia, who's the really, really funny one. She will have you in stitches. Her personality is just, she has an addictive personality to be around. But Gloria and I are very similar. We can be petty, very petty when we want to be. Here's an example of that pettiness. So my grandmother used to have this deep freezer in her den that was real, real just huge and heavy. It was from like 1981, and the door on it was really, really heavy. If you don't know what a deep freezer is, it's just a freezer where you actually lift up the lid and you put the things in and put them down inside, and then you put the lid back down, and they can just hold a lot more. And so the door to this deep freezer was so heavy. The door at least was like 30 pounds, literally. It was just a real throwback old freezer. And that thing just had a long life. It just never died. So my grandma had that deep freezer until about 2007. Now, the freezer door had a good little latch on it. So, of course, when you would lift it up, it would hold itself open and you could get your stuff out. And then when you're done, you would close it. Now, here was the thing. Somebody had broke the freezer that week. And everybody in the house knew that this freezer was broken. So when you would lift it up, it would just slam as soon as you opened it if you didn't hold it. And so we all knew that with that freezer, you got to hold it open. And so there was a woman who had married into the family. And at that time, her husband had died a few years earlier. And she hadn't really been around as much. And my Aunt Gloria wasn't crazy over her. It wasn't that she disliked her or anything. It was just like their energy just didn't align. And so one time that lady came to the house and she was like, hey girl, I want to borrow some grass. We're like, borrow some grass? She's like, yeah. I mean, she showed up with the shovel. She's like, yeah, I just want to borrow some grass. I was going to just see if I could get a patch out the backyard because I need to put it in my yard. And we're like, okay. So mind you, I'm outside doing whatever, hanging out and stuff like that. And so me and Brandon come back in the house, and this is 20 minutes later. I come in that house. That lady is sitting there on the couch with a big frozen bag of peas on her head. And we're like, what happened to her? And one of the other people in the house was like, oh, she was trying to get a popsicle out the freezer, and the freezer closed on her head. And the worst part was, Gloria was sitting there the whole time and knew that that door was broken. And she let that lady go in that freezer and let that thing just go boom right on her head. And mind you, this lady was like 60. That lady had like a concussion, everything. And my Aunt Gloria didn't move from that chair. She stayed in that chair watching Judge Judy. Oh, are you okay? Well, let me go on and get you that bag of peas or something to hold it, to put on there. You should be okay. Yeah, I didn't know it was broken. I was like, what? Petty. And we're both Leos. Like, our birthdays are 2 days apart. So she and I, we just click. And so Gloria is the one that pretty much takes care of everybody, keeps everything together. Then there's Michaela. Now, Michaela is probably one of my favorite relatives. Michaela is also special needs. She has Prader-Willi syndrome. And Prader-Willi syndrome is a disease that has a bunch of elements. But the main two elements are that it's kind of a form of autism, but it's also a disease where your body literally has no metabolism and your body doesn't tell you when you're full. So you can literally eat and never get full. You can eat yourself to death, literally. And the other thing about it is, because of that syndrome, she literally has no metabolism. So everything she eats stays on her. So she's extremely overweight, and it's not something that she can help, because with the combination of the autism spectrum and then just her body telling her that she's always hungry, it's really hard for people with her condition, especially if they have an extreme version, to keep their weight managed. Now, I will say that she's always done very well for herself. At this point, she's 21. Back in during this time period for this story, she was like 9. But, she can read, she can write, she can pretty much do everything. She can take care of herself almost, but she's always just going to need an additional person working with her. And then there's my younger brother, Marcus, who at this point is about 10 years old, which also means Michaela would have not been 9. Michaela would have been closer to 7, going on 8. So, my bad on that. And so, Marcus is Marcus. We're brothers that have about a 7-year gap between us. And so we like to troll each other and do different things that get on each other's nerves. But that's pretty much me and my brother. And then there's my cousin Brandon. Like, you may remember him if you have my album. He was on that interlude called Family Values. But me and Brandon have always been super, super tight. Literally, we're like brothers. We were always just super close because we're only about a year and a half apart. And so me and Brandon always been tight. And one of the reasons I always loved to go to Savannah is because I knew that Brandon would always be there. He lived in Atlanta, but he would always come down for the summer whenever I was there. And me and him would just hit it off, have us a ball. Then there's my cousin Tiffany, who is the third grandchild. There's pretty much only 3 grandchildren in that little generation out of my grandmother's grandchildren. So it was Tiffany, who was the oldest. She had about 8 years on me, and then there was Brandon, and then there was myself. And so Tiffany always had a unique experience because she was so much older than us. And so, kind of like if you think of the Rugrats, she could kind of be like Angelica sometimes. Not like she was mean or anything, but she called the shots when we were younger. Like, I used to hate when we played Monopoly, especially when I was about 7 or 6, because of course, when you're 6 or 7, your counting skills aren't really that great. You're still learning everything. Brandon had about a year and a half on me, so he was a little bit more advanced. But Tiffany, of course, is like in middle school. And here's the thing about playing Monopoly in our family. Like, Monopoly was intense because there was so many extra rules that we used to create that made no sense. And when Tiffany played, like, you would be in tears crying because Tiffany would never let you just lose the game. First of all, she would play with alliances. Her and Brandon would always make an alliance against me because they knew I was the cousin that couldn't count good. And so they would have all kind of alliances and be plotting everything. And before you know it, on the game, the only piece of property I had was Reading Railroad. And then they got everything else and houses and hotels. And so I'm broke. And then they also had insurance. Now get this. What they would do, pretty much, if they landed on each other's property, like say my cousin Tiffany landed on Brandon's property and she owed him $12. The thing would be this. Brandon would only charge her $10. She could keep the two and she put the two in her insurance pile. And so as you continue to do rounds and rounds and rounds and rounds, you'd end up having $700, $800, $900, $1,000 in your insurance pile, especially once you started getting houses and hotels, you know. So, you know, you owe somebody $1,400, but they're only going to make you pay $1,300 and you keep the $300. And so pretty much when they would land on each other's property, if it really got to the point where they were running out of money, they could go into their insurance pot and pull that as well. So that was an agreement that only the two of them had made. And then they had immunity. I'm just like, how many different pieces y'all got? And so immunity is pretty much exactly as it is. Immunity. So they would have all kind of agreements where, okay, well, if you land on my boardwalk, you have immunity the first two times you land on it. And then after that, you got to pay me. Now, mind you, I was not privileged to get any of this. I was just out of luck with my little Reading Railroad piece. And so I'd be in there just crying. And like I said, Tiffany would never let you just lose the game. Once you started, you were going to be stuck in this game until Tiffany got tired of playing it. This was like some Jumanji mess. Like, the game would never end. And so I would have all the $22 in my little Reading Railroad piece, and I would land. No matter where I went on the board, I owed money. One time, they even somehow bought property on the little Just Visiting Jail box. You can't even buy it, but somehow her and Brandon worked something out. You got to owe money to go visit somebody in jail. And so there was this one time, I was so broke. I'm crying. I don't want to play anymore. I just want to go outside and play in my grandma's moss tree and call it a day. And Tiffany wouldn't let me get out the game. And so I, no matter where I moved on the board, I was going to owe somebody money, either Brandon or Tiffany. And so at one point, I land on some property that Tiffany has, and she got about 9 hotels on it because, you know, they do their own rules with the houses and hotels as well. So you land on a piece of property with 20 hotels on it, and now you owe $5,000. So what Tiffany would do, knowing that I only had $22 in my Reading Railroad and maybe the short line, she would take both of my properties, and then she would take all but $1 just so I could stay in the game and pray that I can make it a pass go and get my $200 just so she could take that too. Like, it used to be the most torturous game. I used to be in my feelings. I hated that game so much. I still suck at Monopoly, and I think it's rooted in playing with them. So yeah, that's Tiffany. But Tiffany, one thing about her, when I tell you that girl can sing, like, sing. Pretty much everybody in the family can sing. To be honest, I'm the weak link in the family when it comes to vocals, but Tiffany can, like, sing you under a table. That's her gift. And my brother's a really good singer as well, too. And so actually all of them, me and Brandon, we're cool. But Tiffany, she's the Whitney Houston in the family. And then there was Grandma, the bread and butter that keeps everything together. Now, a lot of times when people think of a grandmother, they think of the nice, sweet, warm lady, like Big Mama from Soul Food, you know. Seems like we all make some pretty bad mistakes. My husband almost lost his house gambling, but I worked. Cleaning up for, I don't know why I know that whole movie by heart, but anyway, you know, they swear that that's grandmother. My grandma, she was that, but my grandma was also real just about it. You know what I mean? Like, she had fight in her. She wasn't scared of nobody. She was going to tell you about yourself. I told y'all, I think I said it in the first podcast. In the last moments that I saw her alive, she gave me the middle finger and $20. That was her way of saying I love you. And so, you know, my grandma, I loved her to death. And the coolest thing about her was that you could talk to her about anything. I think that's why I really enjoyed that summer there. When I tell you, she would sit up with you till 2, 3, sometimes 4 in the morning just talking about life. And, you know, Brandon and I would be ranting about how horrible our lives were with our parents. And she would just sit there and just let you just talk to her. Like, she just enjoyed your company. And, I mean, the weirdest thing is then she would still be up by 6 a.m. every morning. I don't know how she did it. But, I mean, she just was really, really cool. But she also could clown. Like, she had jokes for days. Around this time, because it was the summer of 05, Rihanna and Tierra Marie had both came out, and me and Brandon used to fight over who had which one. Like, I always ended up with Rihanna, and he always had Tierra Marie. And my grandma would just start clowning, because she would look at Rihanna and be like, I don't know what kind of kids y'all gonna have, because both of y'all got some big foreheads. She's gonna have to have a C-section to give birth to anything that you produce. I'm like, dang, Grandma. Like, God. And she was just down to earth. Like, I mean, she used to watch Family Guy and South Park with us and actually understand the jokes. You know, most grandmothers would never watch something like no South Park. But we would be right in the den watching South Park. And that kind of stuff used to always just be hilarious. But don't be fooled. She was still an old lady, so she did old lady things. Like, of course, any night when it was thundering, which happens all the time in the South, you know, thunder and lightning after 9 p.m., she would make us turn off everything in the house. The TV, the air conditioner, everything. We'd be in that house sweating. Because it's Savannah, Georgia in the middle of the summer. It's heat index of 112. We in there sweating like nobody's business, and we gotta turn everything off. Because she's like, turn that air conditioner off. Because, you know, that's how the house gets struck by lightning. I ain't got time to be having my house burned down because y'all want to waste up all the energy. Turn all that stuff off. Like, okay. And then in the winter, she would have the heat up so high, it was like, man, you walk into the sauna when you go to her house, and she'd turn that heat up. I'm like, Grandma, it's hard to turn it up. My knees ain't feeling good. Turn the heat up. It's just going to be on for a few minutes. And she had like three different kind of heating systems. She had this throwback gas heater that it was like a standalone little unit that sat in the den. And so you would turn it on, and then, you know, the gas would come on. You'd have to light a match and throw it in there, and then it would... And then that would heat up the den. And then, of course, she had a regular heating system, which was real, real throwback, where it actually used a real flame. It wasn't like central heating. It was this kind of metal grill that would trace, you know, from the ceiling to the floor, and it had vents through it. And then if you looked inside of it, you could see the flames just cooking it and everything like that. And so that kept most of the house, you know, warm. And then the kitchen alone was its own heating unit, because that throwback stove she had, she still had the same stove until about 2002, 2003. But she had the stove that just, when you used it, the whole house was hot. Like, it just, that stove was, man, I think they used that stove on A Set of Color Purple, for real, y'all. Anyway, my grandma was a G, and I will never forget the day that one of the relatives tried to pop off on her, and she was ready to fight. Now, mind you, she had got really sick before, like in 2001, and so afterwards, she had to use a cane and everything. And anyway, there was a relative that got pissed off with something that she said, so the relative told her to just hush, just hush! And so I remember my grandma hopped up, mind you, grabbed her cane, couldn't even grab it the right way. The cane was upside down, so the handle was on the floor, the knob on the bottom was in her hand, and she, what? Come here. I'm like, Grandma, no. And the other person's running around the kitchen table. My grandma's trying to chase her on the other side. I'm like, y'all. And then at the same time, it was so funny because my Aunt Gloria is still in that same recliner. Like, no, Mom, let's not do that. And she's talking to the other person. Calm down. We're not doing this today. Because, like, Gloria is always just calm and collected. And because she also is the one that's pretty much, she was taking care of my grandmother and taking care of Michaela at the same time. You know, Gloria is just always in a calm demeanor. But my grandma just... off the chain. Lord, she was a character. So yes, that summer of 05 was so lit. As you can see, just based on the people I described, it was going to be a good time. The biggest thing I remember from that summer, though, were the fights between me and my brother. When I tell you, Marcus and I fought literally every day about something. And of course, I won all of them because I was bigger than him and much older. Now, I can't say that today. Now he's bigger than me, and it's like everybody hates Chris, and I'm Chris and he's Drew. So he knows all these stupid martial arts moves and wrestling crap. It ain't even a fair fight no more. And he's in the military, so he got me beat. But back then, it was on site and on site. Catch this fade anytime you want. And so he and I fought every day. And my cousin Brandon just used to be like, yo, y'all are wild. Because, you know, Brandon lived in Atlanta, so he was always around, you know, real people. Marcus and I were in little old shelter Spanaway, so the minute we got a taste of freedom and got to be around some real people, we used to just show out. And, of course, I wasn't allowed to really touch my brother when I lived in my parents' house, but at Grandma's house, it was some different rules. So Marcus and I used to fight all the time. And I remember one time, my grandma always kept the house stocked with food, all kind of food, Pot Pockets and bagels and donuts and cookies and chips and all kind of stuff. And so usually Marcus would stay at my Aunt Gloria's house and me and Brandon would stay at my grandma's house because my grandma only had two bedrooms. And so, and get this, in the bedroom that me and my cousin stayed in, it was still the same original beds that my mom and her sisters used to share when they were girls. So this was like some mattress from back when Good Times was still coming on. Like actual new episodes, not the reruns. And those were the most comfortable beds. Like, you would get in that bed and just sink down. Like, it was like, if you want to talk about those Tempur-Pedic mattresses, the two beds in that room predated that. And I mean, you would get some good sleep in those things. But anyway, Marcus normally would stay at Mount Gloria's house. But this specific night, he fought and clawed, and so they let him stay at my grandma's house with us. And me and Brandon used to get annoyed because me and Brandon just used to, like, do our own thing. And then my brother was just so much younger than us that a lot of times we just did things very differently. And what made it funny that night of this specific fight is my brother was already annoyed because he had left his pajamas at Gloria's house. And so he didn't have pajamas. And so my grandma was like, "What? You don't need no pajamas. Go in there and get one of my gowns." And so he had to wear her nightgown. That shit was... That mess, when I tell you, we cooked him that whole night. Oh, God, that crap was so funny. So he was already sick of us that night. Now, remember, I told you my grandma used to just keep food stocked in the house. And so at this point, we used to stay up all night, 2-3 in the morning every night. And so my grandma had already went to bed. We're watching TV, and my brother decides he wants to make a Hot Pocket. No, it wasn't a Hot Pocket. He wanted to make like one of those mini pizzas that you put in the microwave for however long or in the oven. And I was like, "Marcus, nah, man, just get some chips or something. It's too late for all that. Ain't nobody want to do all that." And he was mad because I had had one of those pizzas maybe like 3 hours earlier when it was still 11, 12 o'clock. It's 3 in the morning. And so he's like, "Why? You got to have one. I want one too." And I'm like, "Marcus, I already told you, man. You're not getting one of those. Go get some chips or get something else or go back to sleep. This is why you need to stay at Gloria House. I don't like when you be over here because you're always doing too much. You're not getting no pizza right now. It's too late for that. You need to go to sleep anyway." And so Marcus is mad and he's like, "I want the pizza." I'm like, "Marcus, I'm not going to tell you again. You're not getting the pizza." And so I'm sitting on this recliner, that same one Gloria be sitting on. And so this is the visual. The recliner is facing the TV. Behind the recliner is the kitchen, or not the kitchen, the dining room table. And then to the left of that table is the kitchen. And so I'm sitting, rocking in a little recliner chair, talking my trash, watching TV. Brandon's on the other couch across from me on the side, doing whatever he's doing. And I just see this table mat fly past my head. And I said, "Huh?" And then out of nowhere, there's an arm that goes around my neck. And I look up. Marcus has me in a, or he thought he had me in a headlock. And mind you, he still got the nightgown on. And I'm, what? And so here's the thing. If Marcus would have just been 60 pounds heavier and maybe the age that he is now, he would have won that fight. However, he was 10. I was 17. Ah, hell nah. When I tell you I flipped that boy over that chair so quick, and I mean, I'm dragging him. I told you you're not getting no, pizza. But like, just going at him. Brandon's over here trying to pull me off, and Marcus, I can't stand you. You made me sick. I just want my pizza. And like, just crying and everything, and my grandma's like, "Oh, y'all shut up in there before I come in and whoop all of y'all." And so, you know, the fight is over. I call my dad, like, "Yo, dad," because it's midnight in Seattle, or in Spanaway, and my dad is like, "I know you're not calling me at no midnight for this nonsense. Y'all better get it together because I kick both of y'all behinds." Well, okay, dad, my bad, never mind. Because my parents, they stay going to bed at 9, 10 o'clock. There's no such thing as life after 10 p.m. for them. So calling all the way to Washington State because me and Marcus wanted to fight over some pizza, that was a wrap. But boy, that boy was brave because I didn't see it coming. I was sitting just chilling, rocking in that chair, and that table mat flew past my head. I'm like, "I know he ain't doing me." What? Oh, that was a good fight, but that was just one of them. However, the worst one had to be when somehow Michaela got in the mix of this. Now, let me just give you guys a little bit more insight about Michaela. Michaela is one of the sweetest people in the world. Her heart is just so pure. Like, when she loves you, she loves you. And when she don't rock with you, she don't rock with you. But she is just the sweetest thing. There's nothing she can do wrong. And anytime that she is a little out of pocket, it's more so just because of her condition. She can't help it. And one of the things that they did with her when she was coming up was a lot of music therapy. Because she had a very hard time learning how to speak and how to talk because of just her condition. And so until she was about 5, she kind of, I'm not going to say she talked in gibberish. You kind of knew what she was trying to say. But she didn't become a really clear talker until she was probably closer to 11 or 12. So around this time, her words were getting a lot better. But they did music therapy. And what they would do is, you know, she can also sing, believe it or not. And so she loved to sing, like love singing. And the problem is she also didn't have a real sleep pattern. So she sleep whenever she felt like it, wake up whenever she felt like it. Like when she's in your house, you don't get a cool 8 hours of sleep. She's going to randomly wake up at 2 in the morning, 4 in the morning, do whatever. And so one of the things with the music therapy was with them teaching her to sing or inspiring her to sing, she would randomly just start singing with her karaoke machine all the time. And I remember my dad had came to visit one time when we were in Savannah. This was like years later. This might have been like 2007, 2008. And so Michaela randomly got up at like 2 a.m. and just started singing with the karaoke machine. And she loves gospel music. So she's singing like Donnie McClurkin or something like that. And she's having a whole concert in her room. Music loud. And everybody in the house is just used to it. Gloria's used to Michaela's noise. Her husband's used to it. Nobody is fazed by it. But my dad was like, hell nah. Absolutely not. And so Michaela's giving a full concert. Michaela had took the whole house to the Grammys. Getting it in. Now remember, this is some random hour late into the night where everybody's asleep except for Michaela. My dad was like, absolutely not. He went in there, snatched that karaoke machine out of there, took it back in the room with him, and closed the door. And Michaela just, she was not used to somebody like telling her no. She, what? And she got mad. She called 911. And then out of nowhere, you just hear her yelling from somewhere. And I'm like, who is she talking to? And all I hear is, Uncle Michael, that's stealing my keyboard! I mean, she was livid. That day was hilarious. But anyway, back to this fight. So we're all at my grandma's house. It's the daytime. My Aunt Gloria's at work. Tiffany's at work. And so it's my grandma, it's me, it's Brandon, it's Marcus, and it's Michaela. And my Aunt Gloria had bought Michaela like a mini exercise trampoline. Because, you know, Michaela, we would do the exercise thing to try to keep her weight balanced. And so every day, you know, we'd dedicate some time to her exercising. You know, we'd put on some music and try to make it fun. And we try to exercise with her. And so on this particular day, my brother, again, he just keeps trying me. I don't know what he was going through that day, but that day I wasn't feeling it. And so, you know, you ever get so mad that you just start laughing just because you're trying to not be your worst person? And so Marcus kept doing stuff. And I'm Marcus. Marcus, listen. And so, you know, I'm there. Now, Brandon is trying to work with Michaela. So here's the visual. There's a couch against the wall that Marcus is on. Directly across from that couch is me. And in between that couch and me is a coffee table. And behind me is the trampoline that Michaela is exercising on. And Brandon's back there with Michaela working the radio and stuff. And so I'm like, Marcus, you know what? I'm not going to fight you today because I'm trying to find you. It's clearly not working. You know what? I'm going to whoop you. And so I took off my belt. And Marcus was like, oh, you're not going to whoop me. I'm like, oh, okay, watch. And so I took the belt off, and I had just the buckle in my hand. So it was like a long lasso whip. I didn't even want to fold it like the parents used to do. I wanted one long thing, so because I was about to be like, wow. And so, of course, I swing and miss because Marcus then rolled to the other side of the couch. He, nope, missed me. And so I drew that belt back because I was going to get him this time. And then all of a sudden, I heard a loud whack. I'm like, huh, what is that? I look behind me. The belt had whipped back, wrapped around Michaela's face, and slapped her. And it's like the whole house just froze. And then I stop and I look back, and Michaela's face just goes. Like she starts crying. When I tell you, my heart dropped. I felt so bad. Listen, when I drew that belt back, I drew that belt back with the conviction of Joe Jackson after Marlon missed that second turn. Like, it was going to go down on Marcus if that belt would have made it towards him. But, like, so when I drew it back with so much conviction and so much energy. I mean, that thing hit that girl so hard, I was done for the day. And then I wanted to really fight Marcus. I'm like, now you done made me hit this little girl for no reason. Like, that, I felt like there was a special place in hell for me that day because you done hit somebody with special needs. Like, you were going to hell on first class. After that, I felt like if I ever make it to heaven, I'm going to start off on probation when I get in. Like, man, I'm on house arrest already. We just had so many fights that summer, and I remember one time he didn't even do nothing. I just swung on accident because it was just reflex. Because I was just, every time he came around, listen, I'm sorry, I didn't know, I'm sorry. And don't be fooled, Marcus was no punk. That kid had so much heart because he would go toe to toe with me and Brandon any day of the week and was unapologetic about it and wasn't scared. Like, that's how I knew, like, yeah, he's going to be something serious when he get older. So let me get all these fights in now because in a few years, that's just going to be it. Also, I don't want y'all to think that I was just pounding on my brother every day. We also still got along. We had a bunch of inside jokes that sometimes Brandon would be like, what the heck? You two are so weird. Like, we used to do this thing where if we were playing around and one of us were getting ready to hit the other, we would yell out cross. And then if you yelled out cross, the other person would just stop what they were doing. And so Brandon used to be like, what the heck? Where is that from? So here's the story behind that really quick. And so one of the churches that we used to go to, there was this family there. When I tell you they were like the freaking Flanders from The Simpsons, like they were just so, so, so heavily religious. Everything they did was overly, I'm just like, oh, whoo, I'm glad I don't live in y'all house. And so I remember one time, they had a son that was my brother's age. The son was at our house, and they were playing on my PlayStation. They were playing Crash Bandicoot. The dad came in and thought Crash Bandicoot was too demonic. And so the son was like, I wasn't playing, Dad, honest. I'm like, yo, what the heck? Oh, okay. But anyway, one time my brother and him, they were in church, like in the basement, running around playing like a little gun game when they were like 5 or 6, you know, boom, pow, pow, pow. And the mother was like, we don't do guns in church. We don't do guns. The only thing that you will use a weapon as a weapon will be the cross of the Lord. And that is because the cross was here to save you. So then, when they kept playing, instead of them going, boom, 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 they would go, cross, cross, cross. I'm like, yo, okay. So me and my brother, that was just like always an inside joke. And then it didn't help that one time we were at the park. We were at Daffin Park. No, it was Daffin Park in Savannah. And this is when my Aunt Sylvia was around. This is the funniest crap for some reason. Me, my Aunt Sylvia, and my cousin Brandon are sitting on this park bench. And across from us, literally, I swear it was the Flanders in real life. It was this dad and his son. And so the dad is reading his inspirational book. The son has his, you know, kid version of the Bible. And every few seconds, I just keep hearing the boy go, glory to God! And I was like, Brandon, did you hear what I just thought I heard? Okay. And then again, glory to God in the highest praise! And then the father would be like, yes, God is good. Now, mind you, I grew up in church. I love the Lord just as much. But I was just like, oh, okay. And so I went looking. And then my Aunt Sylvia, with her clown self, leans into me. And she's like, Flanders! When I tell you, it took everything in me to hold it together and not bust out laughing in these people's faces. Like, I used to just be a terrible person. It was the funniest thing. Because Sylvia knew that I'm the one who can't ever hold anything in, and I bust out laughing. I had to get up and run. I just took a lap to the other side of the park because I didn't want to laugh in front of these people because they were so nice. And I just couldn't do it. Savannah was just so much fun because literally every day was a new memory. And it's just... it was just so different from being in Spanaway, and it was just always so many things going on. I loved my grandma's yard. My grandma's backyard was one of my favorite places because there was just so much character to it. Like, she had a pecan tree, so you could always, like, get the pecans and stuff as they fell. She had a banana tree. The neighbors had a weeping willow that would willow into her yard, and, like, if you stand by it, you can feel, like, the moisture and stuff coming from the tree. She had honeysuckles, and so the backyard was a lot of fun until she had us back there doing some slavery. I remember one time, there was a dang possum in the backyard. And she swore up and down that this thing was a cat. So she sent me back there. And when I tell you I sprinted back in the house because that thing was like, I was like, nope. I'm like, Grandma, that's a possum. That's not a cat. And she, that ain't no possum. You scary, but get back there and go get that thing now. So she sent me back out there with the broom. When I tell you me and that possum, I lost. I threw that broom at the possum and ran back in the house. And then she made my cousin Brandon cut like this whole tree down with a weed whacker because it was like this big bush that had grew into a tree. I don't remember what kind of bush it was. And she was like, go back there and cut that thing down. And at first, she gave him some little small little saw or something. And that thing wasn't doing nothing. Well, take the weed whacker and cut it down. Brandon was out there for like 2 hours cutting that thing down in 100 degree weather. Like, my grandma used to put us to work back in the day. And that crap would be so hilarious because she'd just be talking trash from the window while you outside sweating, working hard. And one of the funniest things is grandmothers know how to divide things amongst the children to make them all have responsibility. So Marcus's job was just to not get on anybody's nerves. And then my job, kind of a lot of times, I would always end up being the one that would sometimes cook for everybody, like in the morning or something like that for breakfast. And then for some reason, Brandon was just her personal assistant all day. She called Brandon for everything. Brandon! Brandon! Go down there and get that paper roll and bring it back around here to Brandon. Like, she called Brandon every 5 minutes. And then it would be funny because if she was calling Brandon and he didn't come, Brandon! Then she called somebody else, Michael! Huh? Go get Brandon! And he'd be like, what? And it would be so funny because when Brandon's mother, my Aunt Sylvia, was there, then they would switch roles. And it would be Sylvia that she called her every day. Sylvia! 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 And so Sylvia used to just make me laugh too, because even when Michaela was younger, she used to mimic what other people would say, and then she would try to use that as her own conversation. And so one time Michaela was crying about something. We don't know what happened, but she was just hysterically crying. I'm like, huh, what's wrong? And then out of nowhere, she's, I'm like, Sylvia! I'm like, what? Huh? Mind you, Sylvia wasn't even in the house. Sylvia was like across the street. And so when Sylvia came in the house, she was like, well, what did I do? I'm like, I don't know, but she was imitating grandma, how grandma used to always call Sylvia for everything. And my grandma used to always say how she would bop somebody, like if they would get on her, I'll bop you upside the head. And so I think Michaela used to put different terms together and make her own phrases. So she'd always hear people at the school that she went to always saying, like, get out of my face, get out of my face. And so then she would combine what my grandma said. And so when she was pissed off at you, she'd bop my face, bop my face. And it was like, you didn't know if she was saying, get out of my face, or she was going to bop your face, but you just knew to get out of her way. Like, Michaela, just, I love that girl to death. I love me some Michaela. especially when she learned how to cuss. Like, God, when she learned how to cuss, and she used to always say damn, but she would always use it in the weirdest context. You damn! I'm like, Michaela, you can't say damn. You damn! You can't say damn. No damn? No, you can't say damn. Damn? No! When I tell you I love my family, so many stories for days. And the funniest thing with my grandma, like I told you in the beginning, I love the conversations that we would have, especially like it would be 1 or 2 in the morning and it would be me, my grandmother, and Brandon sitting in the kitchen, sitting around, you know, eating some snacks or something. And after we'd done all this ranting and venting about how hard life is at the age of 17 or whatever, you know, she would just give you the best advice and you would just feel so much better afterwards. And the thing that used to get me would be this. We would be up till 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning, sometimes 4. And so, of course, when it's time to go to sleep, me and Brandon in that bed, knocked out. And then all of a sudden, you start hearing something like, fire! Fire! And you hear, like, pots and pans crashing in the kitchen. And so you would hop up and run. And it's like 6 in the morning, or 7 sometimes. You get up and run, and, huh, what's wrong? Oh, y'all just need to wake up. It's time to get up. What? Huh? Get up! Y'all not gonna be sleeping in my house all day. Y'all need to get up. And you'd be confused, like, wait a minute, how are you this wide awake at 6, 7 in the morning? We just went to bed 2 hours ago. And now, mind you, I'm feeling like I'm hungover and I didn't have 3 vodkas the night before. And she's wide awake, ready to start the day, talking about what we about to go do. Like, okay, so yeah, my grandma, lots of character. She was a character, man. And one of my favorite parts about Savannah was always going to visit my grandma's church. My grandmother went to Happy Home Missionary Baptist Church. And the church just always has so many good memories. There was a time period where I actually lived with my grandma for like 1.5 years while my parents were in Korea. And so I always remembered all these different people, and they would always like to see how much I had grown every time I would come to visit for the summer or for Christmas. But as I got older, it was weird because they would always forget who I was. They always knew Brandon, they knew Marcus, but they would never remember me. So you'd be going, and mind you, this church was like an older church, so a lot of the members were, you know, senior citizen age. There were a lot of older members in the church, and they'd be like, oh, look at Brandon. Oh, Brandon got so big. Oh, look at Marcus. And then they look at you, who's that? Who's that one? Brandon? I'm like, no, I'm Michael. Michael? Who's Michael? And then my grandma would have to go, oh, no, that's Buck Boy. That's Buck's Boy. And so here's the context behind Buck's Boy. Back when my mother was a little girl, the way that my grandma used to plait their hair, her sisters used to think she looked like Buckwheat from the Little Rascals. So her nickname was Buck growing up as a child. And when I tell you, she hated that name. And then my dad was so petty, our first dog, that's what he named him. He named the dog Buck. And so my mother got rid of that dog too. And I just always loved the hardwood floors. Like, there's nothing like... The thing I love about church is... I'm over here talking about church. I done cussed all of them through this podcast. But the thing I love about church, especially my grandmother's, like, they had these hardwood floors. And when they would sing some of those traditional throwback songs, everybody would just be stumping. And the echo and the acoustics of those feet tapping that floor with the voices that were harmonizing in the sanctuary, it's, like, one of the most nostalgic things. Like, even with gospel music... All of my favorite gospel music is all of that throwback slave sounding, well, not slave sounding gospel, but like I really like all the stuff from the 60s and the 70s and the 80s. I really like all of the old James Cleveland tracks, even though, yeah, we've heard about James Cleveland, but I like all the James Cleveland stuff. You know, just all the stuff that's real throwback. There's just something different about it in comparison to the more current gospel. Now, don't get me wrong. I still like all the newer stuff as well. But something in the music back then, there's a different feeling to it. But I used to love that when they would just tap their feet on the floor and make those sounds. And man, listen, if church service was ever dead, we always knew that eventually my grandmother would just randomly stand up and start singing, like belting out, like, like she would just let that out and just sing. Like, I mean, her voice would carry through the whole sanctuary, and then that would just set the whole service off. And she used to only do it every blue moon, but it would just wake up the service and then we'd be in there for another hour. But you know, that's one of the good memories. That entire summer just gave me a new appreciation for family and just really cherishing the people that are in your life. And so that made me also appreciate my parents even more. And mind you, it wasn't like we were on super bad terms or anything. We just saw things differently. And I was still keeping up with my parents literally every day and calling. So really, any issues that we may have had before I got on that plane were already hashed out before I got on the plane to come back home. That summer was just so much fun. I mean, we went to so many different places and did so many things because, you know, the beach is down the street and we would just randomly go get ice cream. And then Aunt Gloria had the van and we would just load up in the van and just go to different places. Different people would come to the house. You know, me and Brandon would put on random variety shows all the time, and me and Brandon just clowned all day anyway. And I mean, there were just a bunch of different things that were always going on. Savannah is just, I really love that city. I remember there was the lady that had the little ice pops that she would sell around the corner. Like, Savannah has a lot of my childhood there. Like, when I did live there as a child for that temporary time period, you know, there was a preschool around the corner from my grandma's house. And every time that I would go for the summer or for Christmas, I would always go and visit the preschool, just, and the lady would see how much I had grown. And then there was just so many different memories that were there. And then, of course, the food. We always had a Low Country Boil all the time. You know, with the crawfish and the shrimp and the potatoes and the sausage and the corn. Like, I can still taste it. And I love the sweet tea. Because, you know, they don't have sweet tea in the West Coast when you go to the fast food restaurants. That's more of an East Coast Southern thing. I just loved all of those different things. I will say, one thing that I did learn that I still know for sure. I am a punk when it comes to roaches. They have just always freaked me out. Like, roaches are from another planet. I'm just convinced that these things are not from Earth. And it's not like you can just step on them because they're too big. It's not like an ant or something. Like, stepping on a roach is like stepping on an egg. You feel everything crushed under your foot. It's the worst feeling. And one time, I stepped on one barefoot on accident because my grandmother's house was built in 1927. So it has all kind of cracks and everything in it. And so she always had roaches. Now, she keeps a clean house, but roaches just showed up. And then it's like the roaches would mate with the water bugs over there and make like a mutant roach. And then they could fly. And yo, them things would make a punk out of anybody. And I remember one time there was this big old one in my grandma's dining room, and so I had grabbed the spray and I'm trying to kill this thing, and I'm just spraying it, and the roach is not dying, it's just like walking, and I swear it looked back at me like, bruh, chill out. I was like, huh, excuse me? So I sprayed it some more, it looked back again like, look, I done told you, cut it out. And I sprayed it again and it fucked them wings up. I'm like, man, listen, turned out the spray that I had was not a spray that kills roaches, it's just a spray that prevents them from coming in the house. It annoys them. So the roach was annoyed with me. I was getting on the roach's nerves. I'm like, you know, this is crazy. So my cousin Brandon ended up with a shoe and just whoop. I was like, how do y'all just do that? How? Even when I saw Men in Black, that grossed me out when Will kept stepping on all of them. But I mean, roaches will make a punk out of anybody. I remember the one and only time me and Brandon ever got close to getting in a fight. Like, me and Brandon never fight about anything. I think the last time we ever had a real fight, we might have been 7 or 8. But that same summer, I don't even know what he said, but I was like, you know what? And right as I was getting ready to get up, I felt something on my hand. And I looked, and it's like this small little roach. And I was like, oh! And like, for some reason, that crap just ended up being so funny that we forgot what we were fighting about. We laughed like 10 minutes. And there was another time, I think I was about to get Marcus again. I was about to cuss him out. And I lift the trash can up, and one just flew out. And, and it just started running. Like, these things used to just be all over. And what it was is because my grandma had that big giant pecan tree, and she had that banana tree, and the neighbor had the weeping willow, and then there were two date trees in the front, and then because there were cracks in the foundation of the house, roaches just always found their way in the house. It was so hard to keep them things out. And man, it's like they don't die. Even when you spray them, they just flip upside down, kick them little legs, and they kick them legs for like 3 days. I'm like, yo, when does this thing die? See, I mean, you gotta sweep it up and throw it out, but like, roaches take forever to die. And so that would be the one thing that used to freak me out. We have so many memories of just us running from roaches. One time I came, my mother had packed some cookies with me one time that she had made to take to my grandma's house when I flew to Savannah one time when I was like 8 or 9. But my mom's not good at baking if it's not from the box, at least cookies. And so she had these little biscuit cookies, is what we called them. And so I remember I came and I was like, I brought everybody some cookies that my mom made. And my aunt Sylvia was like, ain't nobody want them nasty things. As a matter of fact, we're going to use that to trap the roaches tonight. And so we had these cookies scattered all around the house trying to trap the roaches. And man, them roaches, they didn't even want the cookies. I'm like, man, but like something about the roaches in Savannah, they're like some mutant thing. Remember that heating unit I told you about, how it had the flame? I'm telling you, one time we were sitting there, and I saw the roach run across the room. I'm like, uh-oh. And so, of course, I done put my feet on top of the chair. I'm freaking out. And then the roach comes back out. I watched this roach run under that vent into the flame. I'm like, oh, well, he's gone now. He's cooking. He's toast now. He's roach kebab. And then he walked right back out like nothing happened. I'm like, wait, what? So that's why I don't think they're from this planet. I'm like, how did this roach just walk through a fire and come back out? I don't know. Anyway, let me wrap this up. So Savannah, it was just, when I tell you that was the best summer, everything, even the music was good. Like 05 that summer, if you're an R&B fan, the music was so good. Like Neo had came out, Sierra had came out, like Genesis had came out, Keisha Cole had came out, Chris Brown had came out, Trey Songz had came out, Bobby Valentino had came out, Destiny's, I think I said them already, Destiny's Child, they had came out in that fall, but their album was still carrying over into this summer. Like, that was such a lit little summer. Mariah had made her comeback. Usher was still doing his thing. Alicia was holding on to, or she came out with the Unplugged album. Like, there was just some really, really good music that summer. Like, I remember the music a lot too. Like, we had us a good little summer. Teedra Moses was popping. That was such a good time. And it's just so many memories. And my grandma had this big piano. I remember she would just get on it and play. Everybody would just sing and stuff like that. Savannah was a really, really great experience. And I still love going there even today. It's not the same since my grandma died. It feels different. And you know, because now we all stay at my Aunt Gloria's house. And Gloria's house is cool, but it's not grandma's house. The coolest thing is, like, with grandma's house not having internet and not a lot of toys and stuff, for some reason, we just always had things to do. We were always fulfilled. And I think you get that when you're in a loving environment, when you're around people who truly care about you and care about your well-being and just want you to be happy. Like, I have so many memories of being in Savannah, just so many good ones. And so, of course, by my parents sending me to Savannah for what they thought was a punishment, that ended up being such a reward. And then I still learned my lesson. And I ended up being less of a snob, I think, by the time I got back, because going to Savannah, I was around some real people, like people with real personalities. And so I learned to kind of be a little bit more humble, and I learned to just treat people better. You know what I mean? Anyway, that's it for this podcast. Check in again in the next two Tuesdays from now. We'll have the next one for you. All right, I'm out.